Hello, and welcome to VentureCast. I am David Hornick from August Capital.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital.
And this is Jeff Clavier, not from August Capital.
Jeff Clavier, our favorite and almost only guest.
Yeah, well, I was the only guest until you sort of brought those two entrepreneurs just to say that you had had two other guests besides me.
We also had Andrew Anker once, just
okay.
But he's sort of August, so it's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that's right.
But August. You had made a lot of jokes and innuendos about my French accent.
We like it.
Which, regardless of the fact that I'm now a U.S. citizen, duh.
Oh, very nice, very nice. Congratulations. How was that test?
That was actually frightening because the 100 questions is full of things that you know and things that you don't know because they're not part of your day-to-day culture. Like who was the first, you know, president during the First World War?
Who was
Woodrow
it?
Woodrow Wilson. And
I wouldn't be. I wouldn't
we
be
would
a
fail.
Citizen.
We would totally fail.
That's awesome. Okay, so, give me another one.
There were the four names of the guys who wrote the Declaration of Independence.
Pass.
So,
we'll send Howard to France.
We won.
Congratulations. Well,
congratulations.
We just give you crap about your accent in large part because our wives like it.
I know.
And that's
I
not.
Know.
And that's just seems unfair. Just because you have a freaking accent. I mean, admittedly, I'm kind of whiny and have that raspy thing going. Well, so Jeff, I think rightfully pointed out that this is the first Venture Cast of the new year.
It is.
We're getting in right in under the wire in January. So
yeah,
that's good news.
We would like to do them every month. It's just sometimes months go by without us noticing.
It's really cooking by. I was at this event over this week, and I forget what the conversation was, but sort of a topic about family. And I said that I didn't really think about it until my first child went off to college, and then you realize, like, time passes unbelievably quickly, right? Or, you know, I've now been on the Splunk board for 10 years, right? I mean, that's a lot of time to be on a single board. Ebates, I've been working with for 14 years. What's your longest?
14 years?
14 years.
Oh, my God.
Ebates.
I don't know about you guys, but I woke up to a 50-year-old woman the other day.
No! Oh, happy birthday, Junko. 50 years.
But don't say it. She'll get mad at me. She's, what, 30?
Yeah, right. She doesn't listen to
this. You just said it to the two people who listen to
this. She doesn't listen to this. It's okay. Yeah, nobody listens to this anyway.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Nothing. Just let's hope my parents don't talk to her because my parents would tell her happy birthday.
Great.
So the oldest portfolio company I have must be, I want to say, Brightwell, which I invested in 2005. But in terms of board, it's Curse. I've been on that board since December 2008.
So 2005, and that Brightwell has been an interesting run, right? Because it's mm-hmm. shift. That business has changed over time, and it's one of these that had, as I understand it, I'm not involved, some challenges early on, then found a business model that seems to be just crushing
it. Yeah, it's now the largest video ad network and most successful. So
my oldest is 2005. It's Flurry that I have. So similar time frame.
Yep.
And I mean, not compared to Ebates.
Yeah, no, Ebates. I mean, look, on the one hand, 14 years is a long time, and particularly for a private company. On the other hand, the Ebates business has been doing great. You know, it had a period of time where it was really challenging, but now it provides a ton of value for both the consumers and the you know, stores that it supports. So sometimes you just have to, it takes a while for these things to mature. But the amazing thing is, like, 14 years, that's unbelievable. I can't, I certainly don't have any sense that time has passed that quickly.
It's crazy. So is it supposed to show that we're mature or that we're old farts, or
just time passes?
I think what's interesting is, you know, that shows that the business we're in is really a long-term business. And even though for us at Seed Stage, we typically stay on the board for a couple of years, and then once we bring great firms like August, then we basically give you the keys and then we leave. In some cases, we'll actually stay involved if we can bring something very specific. But for us, with our larger portfolios, it's actually a challenge because it's all about the value add that we deliver. But we have, you know, 10x the load in terms of number of companies per investment professional. So it's always sort of a challenging math.
Well, it's hard. It's hard for all of us, right? Howard and I have the same thing. Howard and I think the two of us have the most portfolio companies in August.
And you have more than me. I think I have 8 or 9.
So that's, you know, it's a at some point you say, okay, I can follow this set of companies, but then, you know, companies go public or they get sold. I just had a company get bought by AOL, a company called Gravity, and
Yay! Congratulations to the founders.
Way to go, Gravity! And we funded. You know, we were the along with Jeff Yang at Redpoint. I funded that company when it was three guys and an idea.
And literally three guys out of MySpace and an idea.
Yeah. Right?
If you've heard of MySpace, it was this company down in Los Angeles.
this old company that used to compete with Facebook. But yeah, this great team. I was actually just talking with a young venture capitalist today about this idea. He said, oh, do you actually still invest in ideas? And I said, you know, look, there are plenty of times when the teams are so good that you say, this is interesting and it's a team that's going to drive value. And that was Gravity. And we worked for 5 years, I think, and they built really great technology. Now AOL has bought the company to bring this kind of personalization technology to bear. It's a great outcome for these guys. It's a shame to see them go because I really enjoy them.
But now you have another board slot
open. But now I can invest in another company, and I've signed a term sheet.
Yeah.
how quickly they...
I was about to say, wait, I have one for you.
Oh, well,
I'll send it to you.
I always have room. For you, Mr. Clavier, there's always room.
So I think that's an interesting segue to what we're discussing, which is... when should entrepreneurs consider that money is a commodity and forget about the value add and the time, the availability, and the experience, versus when does that matter? In the context of the AngelList syndicates we were discussing, where you have now, thanks to AngelList, a lot of leverage for some of the lead angels to get, you know, 25 or 50K in a deal, and then $1 million follows them.
So I'll just describe it for you. So AngelList is this website, the social network for investors. Is that what they're calling it? You never know who's listening to this. I want to make sure that people have context. And so AngelList collects up both investors and entrepreneurs looking for angel funding, and they launch this thing called syndicates, where a given individual can say, I will invest in a particular deal, and then a bunch of others will say, I will allow you to invest on my behalf. And so it's basically, I will pledge when you invest that I invest as well. And then those people who are leading the syndicates get a carry. They actually get some percentage of the gain on the deal. And
so, for example, if the deal was $1 million of additional money, then the lead might get another $150,000 to $200,000 worth of value in the upside on that deal.
Yeah, so the carry is 10 to 20%. So on $1 million, it'd be $100,000 to $200,000 in additional value that they get.
Besides the return that they generated.
Independent of how much they invest. So you could invest $100,000 on your own, or $50,000, or $25,000. As long as you lead the syndicate and you have amassed this group of investors, you get that 10 to 20%. So... but it is this interesting question, because suddenly now there's an individual who could put in $25,000 but deliver $1 million investment. It means that the entrepreneur gets $1 million, only has to convince a single individual, and that individual invests $25,000 but could have as much as $225,000 worth of the value of that gain if the deal does well. And that sure changes the dynamic. But as Jeff says, you know, are those people who are actively engaged in the companies in the way that we are as professional investors, or is this something that they do as a side project to what other things they do, etc.? But what's your sense, Jeff? I mean, this in theory is going after the same kinds of companies that you're funding. So are you seeing pressure from AngelList syndicates to get deals done?
No, I think that so far, and you know, syndicates are now 6 months old, so I think we'll see over time how those this situation sort of evolves. And just to be clear, we've been very supportive of AngelList from the get-go. The challenge is what you describe, which is when, as an entrepreneur, you're going to raise $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, which is typically the range in most seed deals that we get involved into, and you're going to say, I'm going to allocate my dollars based on the value and the involvement they expect from the firm or the angels. And what happens is that you're going to get you know, two or three micro VC firms, which are funds like Softec. Softec invests out of an $85 million fund. Most of our peers will be slightly smaller. And you basically say, I'm going to get the bulk of the value and involvement from those professional investors. And then I'm going to get a few angels who have connections, expertise, experience, and I'm going to create the syndicate which will support me. If you overweight on the angels and you don't get the full-time support, help, attention, then there's a potential deficit. If you're an experienced entrepreneur, who cares? Money is a commodity, you choose your people and you're off to the races. If you're a first-time entrepreneur, actually not doing a good job at building this foundation, your syndicate, will potentially be a real issue. That's what we've seen. And so for us, AngelList has been very useful in a few cases as a backfill. So we've used it in a few deals where it was an easy 200-300K raise of
additional capital.
Yeah. That's the way we have used it or have seen it used in our syndicates. But we've heard of entrepreneurs who've raised multi-million-dollar rounds on AngelList, and we'll see how they fare. Because
convertible debt, or are they cap debt, or what's the normal structure on AngelList?
I think they try and push for equity rounds as much as possible. You have the holdups, which typically come from the Y Combinator, where it's very hard to convince Y Combinator entrepreneurs to do nothing but the Y Combinator convertible note. Otherwise, Naval has been a proponent of the Series C documents, and he's actually trying to automate the Series C as much as possible. So at some point, I wouldn't be surprised if AngelList sort of allowed you to, actually contractually commit to a deal by clicking a button and signing electronically. It's kind of almost like that already, which is great because it makes it, sort of easy. The question is, where is the boundary of professional investors needing to be involved versus not? And, we'll see.
And so the Series Seed are the ones that Ted over at Fenwick produced.
So Ted Wang, SeriesSeed.com.
Yeah.
And those are great documents. We use either those documents or things which are inspired of those documents when we do our own round. So that, my legal costs are no more than $12,000.
Yep.
So I had a company recently which 6 years or so ago, at Draper Richards, we invested in a seed round. It was the only capped convertible note that we did in the entire fund. And it became a very interesting situation recently because the company didn't need to raise money until 6 years later, which is now. And they hadn't realized the impact of the interest on the convertible debt over 6 years. And when they did all the math, they realized that their kind of the percentage that they had to sell off with the conversion roughly dropped the valuation of the company in half.
What
they thought it would be, almost in half. Because and had they simply sold equity at the beginning instead of a convertible note with a cap and interest, and it was a big, rude awakening for them where suddenly it wasn't what they thought it was.
That's the issue of that instrument that you're not supposed to use more than once for a small amount, and therefore the impact of the cap or the interest is minimal. 6 years ago, I assume you didn't have a 1 or 2% interest like the ones we have now.
8%.
It was 8%. Yeah. So when you compound 8% over 6 years, it's actually quite a bit of money.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it's always the case.
And the lawyer said, and here's how the conversion looks like. And they're like, where's my company going? And the lawyer was like, well, remember when we said you should sell equity?
Yeah, it is a tricky thing. I mean, at the end of it, but this is exactly why I've written about this in Venture Blog. I wrote this big diatribe about sell equity at a price you think's fair to investors you want to be engaged and involved, and then all of you will get busy trying to build value in the company. And if you do extraordinarily well at that, everybody will be rewarded, as opposed to a set of structures that create this kind of incentive or make investors less excited about a big up round because they're being converted without a cap and they're going to end up owning 0.2% of the company when all is said and done.
Or they're being converted, but because it's debt, there's no pro rata participation, and then you look at the deal, and you can't, you know, maintain your ownership.
Have you ever been? I'm sure you have documents that don't allow this either. You're not doing convertible debt or whatever. But the other thing is, because it is
sometimes
debt,
we do. Sometimes we don't have a choice.
People can buy you out, right? I mean, it's not. Have you ever had anyone try and say, "Fine, I'll give you the money back"? Because that's a brutal.
We've seen structures where the docs, and that's sort of the challenge as well. People sort of sign those docs without reading them, and very often we've seen that there was little to no legal due diligence on the company itself when you use convert debt, because there's no lead. And so no one is there doing the cleanup. And that's one of my fears, is that, you know, no one has paid attention. You're sort of coming around and you go like, what is this big stinky pile of shit which is in this corner? And people go, what?
To put it gently.
Where? And that's why we try and we'll, I don't know how many convertible notes we've signed in the last fund, but it's less than 10% of the deals. Yeah. Or they're always sort of short term or whatever.
Yep.
Yes, my father always told me, don't go into debt.
Well, remember
it's so simple.
There was a time when debt was the worst, you know, like, oh, the worst thing you can imagine. Remember the housing crisis and all this, and everybody said, oh, debt's a terrible thing. Debt's just the thing, right? I mean, yeah, I think there are lots of reasons not to be in debt. I'm excited to not owe money on, like, for my college anymore or whatever. But on the other hand, there are instances where debt's pretty good leverage.
To finance inventory, working capital?
I don't know. Yeah. Howard's sort of like, no.
We could discuss this for an hour, but
forget. But it's boring.
So August and Softec are in a company together, and I've been trying to stuff deck to put debt in that company forever, and Howard clearly
won't allow it.
Over his dead body.
So speaking of August,
and we just raised money in that company and a lot of money in equity, and everything is great. We don't need debt.
All right. I just want to. I would like to speak with Mr. Clavier a brief moment about August, because for years I tried to buy August.com. I could not find who owned August.com. I could not buy August.com. And suddenly, out of nowhere, appears a digital lock company that calls themselves August, and they have August.com.
Did
and you funded them? Them.
Yes.
Get out of here.
I was.
No, no. We would like your commitment.
In the seed round.
When they, if they sell or something happens and they no longer keep the name August, may we please have the URL? I would like your assistance in that.
Well, you could always lead the Series B. That would get you closer.
That's actually the CEO actually told me that he said, why don't you fund us and we'll give you an option on the name if it should ever come available.
What's funny is that when I invested, it was called Keys, K-E-A-S-E, which I actually liked as a name, but there were like trademark issues or whatever. And then, boom, you come up with August.
No. So tell us about August, because August is kind of interesting, right? It's one of these new sets of kind of home automation-y things that...
So we actually liked the connected device market. We've done three investments. Fitbit 5 years ago, which was really sort of a precursor, and it was crazy and it was insane to actually do that deal, but it worked. Then we committed to Jason Johnson and Yves Béal, who's a design genius.
Right.
And so August is this connected lock. So it's a lock you replace.
How did those two get connected? Because Yves is really, I mean, is truly like one of the great design geniuses of time. Mm-hmm. So how does he end up in a startup around locks?
Because he actually, so...
He got locked out of his house.
Yves has this company called The Fuse Project that works with very large companies and foundations, and we were talking about Bill Gates. He works with the Bill Gates Foundation as well. And he's also sort of working on a super selective basis with startups, where he becomes sort of the design co-founder. And we were lucky to have Jason, who's an awesome CEO, managed to convince Yves to work with him and take over the design and the positioning and the marketing and the branding of the company. And so it's a lock which replaces your dead lock, and you can then configure your iPhone to either open the door to you, unlock the door for you, or if I know that you're going to come home, then I can invite you through your cell phone to unlock my door. And so for the collaborative consumption market, whether it's Airbnb or HomeJoy, that's a boon, because the number one issue for those companies is, how do I get the keys? How do I return the keys?
And how do I make sure you don't copy the keys in the process?
And exactly. And so...
Take a picture of them.
Take a picture of the... You know, what?
No, and, yeah. No,
we saw an interesting app that I use, and I like the company. It's called Kimi, where you take a picture of the key.
We saw those.
And
they send you the keys
by
email.
The key.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. I have to say, I have copies of my keys, and it works great.
Yep.
So August is all digital. It connects up, and it's connected to your Wi-Fi. How does it?
So
what, how is it connected?
The issue. So you can't connect your lock to, you know, sustainable power. So you have to put batteries in there. The problem with Wi-Fi chips is that they're super energy, you know, inefficient.
Yep.
And so if ever you connect your lock to Wi-Fi, you basically replace your batteries, you know, way too often. And remember, it's a lock. So the lock running out of battery is really, really bad. So it's actually Bluetooth low energy. And what
and then
we
there's
do,
a Wi-Fi to Bluetooth
then,
device.
Then you have the Wi-Fi to Bluetooth device, which is plugged in the corner if you want to. But you actually don't need the Wi-Fi connectivity per se.
So what's it then? Bluetooth low energy to what? Just
to your
phone. Just to your phone. So yeah, it doesn't matter. So as long as you have a cell phone, you come in, it hooks up to your cell phone. It then does the handoff, handshake, and says, "Right, we got it."
Exactly.
Cool.
And it can be sort of hacked and so on and so forth.
So is August the next Nest? Would you be willing to take, what was it, $3.3 billion from Google for August?
$3.2 billion, and I don't think any one of us knows the size of the earnout, because.
You think there's an earnout on top of that?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know. I have no knowledge of the deal, but I know the Wildfire structure, because Wildfire was acquired for $350 million in cash by Google, plus big in earnout. So you can't see because it's a podcast, but I'm showing the size of the earnout.
Like 3 inches.
I've never signed a 280G, you know, sort of paper, like the... What allows founders to avoid paying taxes on their
profit? Yeah, yeah, it's the golden parachute.
Yeah, the golden parachute. I've never signed a big golden parachute that big. So I'm sure the golden parachute must be really.
Well,
big.
You know, so there's some speculation, right? So Nest, which is this connected thermostat device that is both a thinking device and speaking of, you know, a beautiful design, and I mean, so Tony Fadell, who was
a genius.
A genius and the creator of the iPod, created this company, and he then brought together a lot of what we think of as the same kind of, the nature of Apple, which is amazing design, amazing technology, brought together with really simple software experience.
And hardware, hardware installation, they designed their own screws.
It came with
perfect.
A cute little screwdriver. Did you install your own, Howard?
Of course.
We all have them.
Yep.
Yeah, so we are some of...
I have four.
You have four of them. I have one. You have Howard has three.
Two in my house and one in my mom's house.
I wonder if I gave my father one or if he bought his own. But anyway, he has one.
My father refuses to get one because he doesn't trust the internet.
I think your father is right.
He doesn't want his heat connected to the internet because it will get hacked and...
Well, hang on. So, okay, Nest bashing for 2 minutes. Just before they actually sold for $3.2
billion, the bug.
I had the bug, and
do you know about this?
So what happened is that they uploaded a new version of their firmware.
Version
4.0, which was buggy as hell, which depleted the battery, which means that the Nest run into sort of a reboot loop, which means that it shut off your heat. And you
in the winter
no longer,
time.
In the winter time. And you could no longer access anything. So at best, it was telling you it was disconnected. At worst...
Well, this is the concern about Tesla, right? I mean, this is the concern about a car that's basically a software program. And in fact...
That's connected.
Well, so I had this conversation with Reid Hoffman because he was supposed to meet... We were going on this trip and he didn't have... He was dropped off in a car or something. Well, what happened? It turns out that his Tesla wasn't starting and he had a bunch of conversations. They're like, you're going to have to reboot your car. okay, well, how long does that take? And I forget how long it takes, about 25 minutes or something to reboot your car. And he didn't have the time to get to the airport. So this
control, alt, delete
your car to like get started. So so here's Nest, where you have no power. And then how'd they fix it?
No,
I
mean,
right, so I called Nest, and it was a good 30 minutes on hold or 40 minutes on hold. And I finally got them. And this was before they had figured out what the problem was. And the end solution was to detach the unit from the wall, to plug it into a USB charging port using the same plug as you use for your camera uploads to your computer, letting it recharge, plugging it back in the wall, and then every 6 or 8 hours when it dies, to unplug it from the wall and recharge back up the battery. That was the solution.
But you'd have heat. The only problem is that you couldn't sleep for 8 hours because you had to recharge every 6 hours.
I get a
hours.
Big blankie.
So
$3.2 billion,
so
my friend.
I yelled at them, and the beginning was your fault, and it was your Wi-Fi, it was everything. It was,
you know, oh, yeah, I heard that too. Your fault. It's your Wi-Fi.
And then they downgraded back to the old version of the firmware, which sort of didn't solve the issue, but made it sort of less acute. But a bunch of people reported that they were literally freezing in the house because the freaking Nest was...
Yeah, California wasn't bad, but if you're in Minneapolis and you're freezing to death, and the downgrade on software was even funnier because it was incompatible with the new units they had shipped.
True.
So those that were working with the new installed software
then
that were new,
working.
They stopped working. But...
okay, but...
So that's the issue with connected devices. And so, to your point, is Ogre the next Nest? Obviously, I wish I was the investor in the seed round, and your friends at Maveron, your co-investors in Zulily, did the Series A. So, you know...
I didn't know that. We'll see. Was that true? Huh. Who did it?
Maveron invested in August?
Yeah, exactly. Nice.
But I think there is definitely... a few devices like the thermostat, like the potometer and the scale, like a few others that we're looking at that will offer a lot of value when they get connected. And you will see devices in, you know, 5 million, 10 million households in the US. And those companies will be really big and interesting. As to whether you will get to 3.2 billion, you know, it's a steep multiple on the revenues. But it was, I mean, let's be clear, it was a real company. It wasn't like, you know.
Everybody in this room has paid for their products. I gave what? How much were they? $250 each?
$1,000 a year.
Yeah, I bought three. $750 bucks I gave them. And happily, I like it, except for when I'm cold.
Yeah, I was really happy with my Nest until it started to, you know, reboot on me.
So we got connected devices. What else we got? I've heard a lot about. People investing in drones, in the drone world. So now, not only we saw, you guys saw the Jeff Bezos, the future of delivery is drone delivery for whatever.
Amazon Prime Air.
Amazon Air. Which frankly, I'm in. I'm ready for it.
So, the two companies that I saw in the drone space, that interested me the most. One, the name pops to mind, is called Matternet. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Matternet.
And they're not making the drones, they're just building the control software beneath it. And the thing that caught my attention was that they were claiming they believe that delivery within a city, energy for charging the drone for delivery, and depreciation on use of the drone is roughly 7 cents to deliver 2 kilograms or less within a city. Now that's pretty interesting. 7 cents.
Which makes it totally economic compared to these idiotic, the Google
the UPS truck,
delivery.
The UPS truck that comes down your street, that's 7 cents every
second.
But
at least it's full, right? The what's Google's delivery thing?
Delivery, yeah, Google Express.
Google Express has a bunch of Priuses.
I use that all the time.
Guys running to Target and picking up your crap.
And Costco.
And
it's funny because it's clearly the first time they show up at Costco, so they have their Android device showing what they have to pick up and they're trying to find it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Think about it. Then you order like, okay, I'm going to get tons of toilet paper that can't fit in the Prius. They have to go multiple trips for your to charge you, six
that?
Bucks or whatever.
We should do that for
a
price.
Let's do that.
800 rolls
of
toilet paper.
Order a ton.
A truck.
And see how many Prii we get coming. By the way, I was just looking at Maveron because I didn't realize Maveron was an investor. It turns out that their venture partner, a guy named David Wu, was the investor who apparently works with August. According to this, he's an investor in your August company. So I hope it goes as well. for you and for Mavro.
And David was at Homestead before.
Yeah. Is that where he was?
Yeah. He's a good guy.
And you can, you know, always prim the Series B.
So here's the most interesting comment about Google Express that I heard was the rationale behind it is that more and more and more people are just going direct to Amazon and bypassing searches on Google, so Google won't have a chance to monetize your searches, so they want to be the place where you go to do stuff so at least they can monetize your searches. I don't know if it's true or not, but I thought it was an interesting explanation, though I don't imagine Google monetizing toilet paper.
For Google Express, yeah, I don't know.
So, I think that they're just like in logistics.
So going back to drones, so we've actually made a stealth investment, an investment in a company which is still stealth in the drone space. It's also in the software layer, so we don't actually build
drones. No hardware.
We fly them, which is awesome. So we went to
this
test.
Is what you do in the board meetings?
We went to test the software on the Berkeley Marina to basically fly a drone and then get the other drone that was piloted automatically by the control software with the GoPro camera that was sort of following the other drone, and it was awesome.
Is this Drone Wars?
So what do you think the business is here? Like, is the business ultimately
this one is a SaaS play.
So yeah, but it's
a SendGrid.
Yeah, but what's the end use? Like, what, right? If a software platform, you need applications for that.
Insurance. So it's actually what at some point the FDA is going to. Sorry, not the FDA.
The Federal Drug
The FAA.
Federal Aviation Administration. That was apparently not on your citizenship test.
Is going to release
Woodrow Wilson.
What, dude?
World War One.
I'm doing.
Who was the president of World War II?
I'm doing consumer healthcare investments, and I'm worrying about the FDA, and I'm doing drones, and I'm worrying about the FAA.
So the other company, company I saw, I can't remember the name, was exactly a vertical application of drones, and their proposal was that 30% of all prescription pharmaceuticals are disposed of because they expire while they're sitting on the shelves at Walgreens or CVS or whatever your local pharmacy is. And that each city for each big chain will have one distribution center and little shops like they have now. And instead of having any inventory, your doctor will say, you need to go and pick up doxycycline, and a drone will fly it from the distribution center for 7 cents, drop it off at the Walgreens near your house, you'll go pick it up. There's no, it's just-in-time inventory on pharmaceuticals.
Which is way better than what we have now. Yeah, because what you have now is either it's expired because nobody gets it, or for the rarer stuff that you show up and then they say, oh, are three. We only can give you three of them today because we need a few on the shelf, and then come back tomorrow, which is super annoying.
And think about for the drugs that are all around, the inventory costs to have those drugs everywhere where they have like the popular or whatever, doxycycline, Cipro, Zithromax at every Walgreens in the city when they only need a small amount in one distribution center and they fly it out. I like that proposal.
So I think the challenge is with anything related to we're going to get something somewhere and drop it somewhere else. So delivery, the drones today just don't have the technology to have a payload
that is 2 kilograms. 2 kilos. I mean, drugs are very light. It's a very good proposition for pharmaceuticals.
That's one. And then the issue is we don't have the routes, we don't have the software, we don't have the control, we don't have the FAA regulation. And the point is that company, which I mentioned, will implement those so that...
So they're going to become the equivalent of... So we invested in a Theros, which became the Wi-Fi chip and everything, but they had to create the Wi-Fi standard. Mm-hmm. So your stealthy company is going to say, here's the software, but also here are the policies, here's how these things will interact with each other.
Think about the insurance.
How you will insure against if you're using this software?
It's basically making sure that you can today, if you want to fly a drone commercially, which is extremely limited in terms of what you can do, what you can't do, and so on and so forth. You know, the paperwork that you have to produce is several inches sort of thick, and we could instrument all that sort of insurance, but it's super early days, right?
So I wonder if somebody's going to invest in a little company that makes umbrellas for drones, so when they fly in the rain, they don't get wet. No, that's a neat technology.
Wow, Howard!
Parrot, which is sort of a.
You went to MIT. This is what you come up with, MIT.
But Chris Anderson, who we all know. Has sort of the most interesting drone company, 3D Robotics. Our friends at True and at Foundry are investors. And from what I heard, they're doing really well. But so, it's very, very early days. And the question we had for ourselves investing in this this company, in this technology, which we're super excited about, is are we too early?
Too early.
Or yeah. So way too early that, you know, it will take forever for this thing to actually
develop. Where will you land on this wave, the wave of drones? Which is appropriate since apparently today is the day that they're doing the Mavericks, big Mavericks surf competition. But Howard, so this is a total aside, but I was just down in Mexico, and I had never gone into one of these Mexican pharmacies before. Have you been to a Mexican pharmacy where they sell over-the-counter every drug that you can't? I mean, it's like, of course, their big sellers are Viagra. They have big signs, Viagra and Cialis.
Yeah, antibiotics and everything.
But yeah, you can buy amoxicillin. Yeah. You can buy Zithromax.
Europe is the same way.
You can buy antidepressants. Yeah.
Europe is not as unregulated, but stuff like Zithromax and all that, they sell, and it's... And basically, it's only Americans that abuse drugs. Like, Americans, like in Europe, when your kid gets sick, they say, well, let's wait a week and see if you get better, and then if you don't, then we give you some Zithromax. America, the kid coughs once, and the mother's feeding them Zithromax with his orange juice.
Well, it's neurotic. I just thought it was madness.
Yeah. But that's why.
But I did buy a fair amount of Cialis. No, I didn't.
Good for you.
Nice for you. Cialis, the one that has the commercial with the two bathtubs side by side. And they always show the husband and wife or the boyfriend and girlfriend, whatever, in their side-by-side bathtubs. It's very odd.
I don't watch TV.
I don't pay attention to CIA's commercial.
Actually, never mind.
All right, well, we're running out of time. Are there any other like pressing issues we should be discussing? I don't want to miss out on anything.
So you guys had a tremendous year last year with the exit. Are you guys sort of going to come up with the same sort of exits? Are you super excited about 2014?
We have one company that's filed confidentially. That's kind of interesting and exciting, although the market's having a tough day last couple of days, but
well, just wait it out.
I think the market will do fine, and the reality is we have some companies that I'm super excited about that are, and they're in such disparate things, right? You have Howard's Eat Club, which is delivering an unbelievable number of meals to companies and is replacing
cafeterias
and in a super efficient way. We have a company like Fastly that is competing with Akamai and creating a much better CDN company. You know, so it's, the venture business is awesome because you have this opportunity to invest in Fitbit, and it turns into a big multi-million dollar kind of sales. When you funded it, did they even have a Fitbit? Like, did they have?
No, it was a big piece of plastic.
Yeah, now it's this elegant little thing, it goes where you're around your wrist or whatever. So I think actually this will be a pretty good year for August. Hopefully, a good year for Softech.
So far, the first few weeks of the year have been really good. I mean, the key issue for us, seed investors, is can we get our companies to a good Series A and then a great Series B and then hopefully see them scale, because that's where we're going to lose, you know, most of the companies so hard. And the winter break was super busy, where we've had 6, 7, 8, now 9 term sheets for Series A and Series B's. And as I was saying, David, I wired $2.4 million yesterday and today for 3 follow-ons for companies which are doing so well that I'm actually using my reserves way faster than I thought.
And these were all 3 companies you showed us?
No, because they all got preempted.
Preempted.
That's okay. You can still come and we can take a look. We don't mind.
But I have one for you.
Jeff. If you want to be the next VentureCast, we would like to discuss the August and Softech deal that's gotten done.
We have one, which is GigWalk.
Yeah, which is great. I'm glad. And it took us a while, but I mean, this is the thing. I remember having this conversation with someone who was saying, they were saying like, "Oh man, we've shown you a bunch of things, and August never does our deals." But there are 6 of us doing deals. We do 10 deals a year, right? So the likelihood that we do any given deal is actually extremely low compared to an organization like a Sequoia or a whatever, where they have a ton of people, they do a ton of deals. But we do look forward to
it. But
we
should do a deal this year. Yeah. Let's make
that. That's a plan.
Let's try.
All right. Well, that is the plan here on VentureCast. This has been David Hornick from August Capital.
and Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital. And thanks to our guest, Jeff Clavier from Softech.
That's always a pleasure. Good to see you guys.
All right. Happy New Year.